But what I've realized is that all the skills that I learned in corporate, finance, strategy, team management, strategic decision making, you need all of those in business, right? Yeah. It's not fair to say that you're going to use most of those skills, in fact, more skills. You're going to need even more skills to succeed in real estate and business. Yeah. And it's very challenging and it's very satisfying to be able to not just learn the skills, but all the mindset shifts that are needed along the way.
Are you ready to transform your life? This is a no-nonsense show helping immigrants like you create generational wealth, even while working full-time. Get ready to take notes. Here's your host, Saket Jain.
Welcome back, my Great to Wealth listeners. Today, I want to introduce you to somebody who has a very similar background to me. I grew up in India, moved here, climbed the corporate ladder, got tired, had kids. I'm sure, maybe not in that order. Had kids, got tired. Didn't have kids because he got tired, because that wouldn't be the right thing to do. And then really delved into real estate, either by choice or by accident. We'll talk about a story. I want stay for that part of the story, because that's really where the gold nuggets are going to get dropped on why Nithi and his wife made the decision to quit their corporate jobs, high-paying corporate jobs, and they were pretty successful at it, to now doing real estate full-time. And we're just catching up offline where the growth they saw in their portfolio, it would have taken decades to get there, and they got there in a few years. Right now, that doesn't mean everyone should quit their job real estate. It does not mean that. It's just a story. And we're going to try and connect the dots and see what the audience can draw from that. With that said, Nithi, welcome to the show, buddy.
Thank you so much, Saket, for having me.
Awesome, buddy. Nithi, we always start the show with one question. When you hear the term migrate to wealth, what does that mean to you?
Ooh, that means so many things actually to me. I think one, the obvious one that jumps out is just, as you said, our journeys have been similar. For me, the first migration was when I moved here from India when I was in my 20s.
Yeah.
And, you know, trying to build a life. And then the second migration happened when you have kids and you realize what you want more is as much as more wealth, you want more time.
Correct.
And that was my quest for my migration to wealth. I guess that's where that journey started for me.
Love that. Nithi, what does wealth mean to you today?
Today, I think wealth is, you know, a couple of things, right? One is wealth is kind of gives you the time that you need to be able to spend with your family, to be able to follow your dreams and your passions, which I think, you know, the world tells you that there's just one way of doing things and, you know, getting a job and, you know, getting a degree, getting a job. And there is so many other ways to do it. And so that's one is wealth is time, but also generational wealth, right? I think all of us want better opportunities and more for our kids than we had. And as it should be, every generation, it should get easier for every generation.
Definitely.
So that's important as well.
Love that. Love that. Nithi, where are you in that journey, buddy?
So we are, you know, happy to report that we started the journey about 6 or 7 years back. And our first goal was really, you know, quitting our day jobs, right? Because when you're in corporate, as I'm sure a lot of people can relate, when you're in your, you know, day-to-day grind, retirement seems a long way off and wealth seems a long way off. And so we are, both my wife and I, we've retired from our corporate jobs for the last, my wife quit her job about 6 years back. I quit my job about 4 years back. So we've been full-time investing and entrepreneurship. And so that was step one, you know, just for us to be able to quit our jobs and spend time with the kids and all that, which we were happy that we could do when they were still small.
Definitely.
And then now it's just more, you know, I think more about fulfilling our potential and what we, because once you realize you do certain things that you didn't think were possible, you just, you know, you're like, wait, what else can I do, you know, that I didn't think of?
So true, Nithi. Thank you for sharing that journey, man. I appreciate that, because again, I think our kids are similar age. You have two kids, I have two kids. Your kids are 1 year behind my kids in terms of the age. So I think our journeys are very similar. The motivations and the incentives are very, very well aligned. Actually, there's a friend of mine who recently had, if you're listening, you know who I'm talking to, this show is exactly for you because I know the questions you asked me, I want to get them addressed from a third-party view because you may or may not respect me. So whoever you are, I know you know who you are. If you're listening to this, this person has been in the same job for decades, right? And they quit there for a variety of reasons. They are in between jobs right now. And one of the questions that we were asking is that, you know, what do I do next? Right? We were having a very long conversation and then a deeper conversation. Yeah. The thing is the identity that you carry. Because I think it all came down to it's all I know, right?
Yes.
So I'm going to ask you a question, which is going to go back to your identity. When you didn't know a path forward at that time, when you guys made a choice on real estate, and then we'll talk a little bit more on how you got your journey, but it's not like you knew this path is going to work out, but your wife quit her job anyways. And this was about 6 years ago. You built some trajectory, some momentum for about 2 years, and then you had to join her as well full time. What was going through your mind, not the mechanics? Talk to me about your fears, your concerns at that moment 6 years ago when your wife decided. I wish your wife was here too.
Yeah, okay. I know. No, you're right. And she's the one who kind of, you know, kickstarted the whole, you know, journey because I remember, you know, sitting with her at our breakfast table when our kids were 2 years old and we had a newborn and we were both working at the time and she had a long commute, she had an hour long commute to work. And she came back home one day and she's like, you know, I asked for flexibility at my work and I, you know, she'd been at the company for 10 years and she was a great employee. And she asked for a flexibility to say, hey, can I work from home one day a week or something? And this was pre-COVID, so it wasn't, you know, a thing back then. And her boss was like, nope, sorry, can't do that. And she's like, you know, she spent her entire, you know, life, you know, she was brought up by a single mom and she was, you know, it was a tough life. And she was always told that she needed to be independent and, you know, do the right thing and get a degree and get a job. And she's like, you know, she said the words like, I felt a lie had been sold to me. And I think that it was true for both of us. We're like, you know, we're told that if you do things right, and a lot of us are good people. We do what we think people tell us is right. And we do that. And you do that for 10, 15, 20 years. And you realize that maybe it wasn't the right thing.
Right.
And so I think it was just that the pain, that frustration of like not being able to, you know, be with the kids when you wanted them to when they're little. Right. And that, for us, a big driver was that pain. Like that was a driver. And I remember telling my wife every day when I came back from, I actually loved my work. I was in finance and strategy and I was, you know, doing well in my company. And I had a great work-life balance, but I knew that wasn't where I wanted to be. And so I remember telling my wife every day when I came back from work.
Finance and strategy and you had a work-life balance? You're one of the few ones, man. You're one of the few ones. I'm glad to hear that.
Well, I tried, you know, but, you know, I was happy in my job and I loved what I did. But then I remember coming home and telling my wife every day that I hate my job. And I'm going to keep telling myself I hate my job because that's going to force me to go out of my comfort zone and do things.
But did you, I'm going to quick pause it because that's an important point. Did you manufacture that hate or you really hated it?
I had that pain a little bit because I didn't see, you know, I saw people who were in corporate 10, 15 years farther down the road than I was and where I wanted to be. And they were no closer to financial freedom that, you know, I didn't see a path. So it's just, you know, the higher up you go, more responsibilities. Yes, the pay is higher, but you don't actually keep most of that. Right. Through taxes. And so I just didn't see the path. And so it was kind of like pain, but I had to keep reminding and reconnecting with that pain to be able to take action.
Yeah. I think I love that part of what you said. It's because it's easy to say there's one path, which I think the very traditional path, which will say that, you know what, even though I hate it, I'm going to learn to love it. Right. That's one path. And I think most people take that path. What you said is, yes, I can choose to learn to love it, and I probably will if I wanted to, but I don't want to.
Right.
And you know, I want a constant reminder that I hate it. So that constant reminder is going to push you out.
Exactly.
In a way that the decision is made for you rather than right time is there. You're contemplating whether it's the right thing or not. You already made up that mind. You're just now looking for the right opportunity.
Yep.
Is that correct?
100%. I don't mind, none of us mind working hard and, putting ourselves through discomfort, but you want to do it for something that you truly believe in right. That's going to get you to where you want to be. That's what it comes out.
So now, Nithi, let's go to both of us are Indian background, so why don't we can talk about that? So there is the culture that we were brought in, and you were brought up in India, I was brought up in India, was the external societal pressure. Not that it's not true here, but India more so, and for those of my Indian immigrants who are listening, I'm sure you can relate to it. For my non-Indian immigrants, if you know an Indian immigrant, you can relate to it as well. And you probably know an Indian immigrant by now, if you're living in the US. So it's the status that, so what? You got to finance and strategy job that people will kill to get. They will literally kill you to get that job. And you're going to do what? Real estate? And that too, what? You're going to buy crappy buildings or homes, and you're going to, is that what you went to school for, Nithi? Let's talk about that a little bit. That's I hear that in a lot of people's stories, right? That what do I like? And this friend of mine, this dear friend of mine, is going through the same challenge. That, dude, I can do this, but did I just waste 20 years of my life? And I can tell him my story and it works for him, but I think your listening to your story may actually resonate better with them.
you put it so well, which is, that pressure to, that everything that you've done in life got you as far as you've gotten, and to kind of throw it all out the window. Seemingly throw it all out the window. It's not true, but it does seem like that when you're choosing a less traditional path. But
right,
what I've realized is that all the skills that I learned in corporate, finance, strategy, team management, strategic decision making, you need all of those in business, whether
using
it's real
all of them
or otherwise,
right?
Yeah. And so it's not fair to say that you're going to use most of those skills, in fact, more skills. You're going to need even more skills to succeed in real estate and business. Yeah. And it's very challenging and it's very satisfying to be able to not just learn the skills, but all the mindset shifts that are needed along the way.
Correct.
Right.
Correct.
I think it's, I love what you're saying that, Nithi, because I think it's, we look at it as a transaction. I'm changing, let's say, an IT job or a finance job or a strategy or a consulting job to fixing homes. That's really what it comes down to, because it's how you're looking at that transition. But looking at that transition differently is you're trying to be an entrepreneur. You want to be a full-time investor. That's very different than fixing a home. Very, very different. Because when you're saying, how can I fix homes at scale, right? How can I make it so that I can involve other people in? That is where now you go back to your 20, 30, 10, depending upon how much experience you have, all the skills that you learned there are going to matter now. And then some, because you'll realize you need to know how to clean your toilet. Because you may not have ever cleaned it, but you are the only one who's cleaning it because you are the janitor and you are the executive, right? And in between everything. So if you haven't played that role before as a job, actually finding, I realized when I transitioned out of my corporate role, I was going crazy, man, because I'm like, dude, I don't have enough time. I'm like, what do I focus on? Do I focus on this? Do I focus on that? Because everything needs attention and I don't have the skills for everything, right? I was great at one thing. I was a consultant. I was great at one thing and I was very good at it. So right. I loved it. All right. So I'm like, okay, now I need to learn marketing. I don't know marketing. I need to learn sales. Oh, shoot. Salespeople are so bad. They're sleazy. Right. But they don't have to be. It depends upon how do you want to sell? I think I love this conversation because that's really where the problem happens is you're putting your own limitations saying for the next step is beneath me. And it's okay. You can do that. But if you want to take anything, leaving your country to the US was the biggest barrier that most of us immigrants have taken. You've already taken that risk, biggest risk with your life.
That's right.
Why are we now saying, and I'd love to hear your perspective on that as well, why are we saying that something is beneath me before even trying it? Any thoughts on that, Nithi?
You know, it is interesting. Sometimes we build, and it kind of goes back to buying into what society tells us you're capable of, right? And all our lives, we've had this one path in mind, or, you know, certain things that we think we're capable of. And it's uncomfortable. It's really uncomfortable to think that you're going to do something different, because, you know, being experts at what we do in our day jobs give us our identity. That gives us our identity. And once you take that identity away, it can be very, like, you know, you can feel very vulnerable, right? Yeah, uncomfortable, because you're like, wait, this is not my zone of comfort. And but that's precisely it, right? Like, that is why it's hard, but it is so worth it, right? It is so worth it, because you can, instead of taking 20, 30 years to follow the traditional path and retire by the time you're 60 or 65, you can maybe work as hard, if not, you know, around the same amount of work. It's not a lot more work. Yes, it's more uncomfortable, and you're learning a lot more skills, and your growth is a lot more, but you can do all of that in 3 to 5 years in entrepreneurship and have the same kind of financial success in 3 to 5 years that you would have in 20 or 30 years. And so, you know, with that compression comes growth and discomfort.
Yeah, I think growth always happens at the margin, right? It never happens within the constraint. It always is outside at the border of the constraint, where it's comfortable enough, but you know you can do it.
That's right.
All of us has that inner calling that, of course, most of us won't jump off a cliff.
Right.
Even if we wanted to. Yeah, that's uncomfortable, but we know we're not going to survive, right? So everyone has we all have an internal compass saying that, Saket, Nithi, I know you're comfortable, but you can do it. If somebody else can do, especially the model that we're following, I keep telling people, we're not creating Google, we're not creating Airbnb, we're not creating Facebook. We're not. So I'll be the first one to say, there's no innovation. In terms of that, that's going to change the society, right? And I'm okay with that. You're basically taking a model that Nithi has and I have and replicating it. So if Nithi can do it, I can do it. And there's tons of other people like us who are doing it. Why won't somebody else? Like, why is it so hard then? Right?
100%. 100%. Like, I've been shouting from rooftops for the last few years that everybody can do this. Yes, you know, yes, it takes work and it takes patience, but I mean, it is so much better than the alternative. And you will.
Yeah, that's kind of funny, Nithi. Somebody told me the other day, it requires risk tolerance. I'm like, no, it doesn't require risk tolerance. It requires waking up. That's all it requires. It is no risk tolerance. Investing in stock market requires risk tolerance. But replicating an existing business model that somebody else has done 1,000 times, that doesn't require much risk. That just requires you waking up.
Yeah. And we've, you know, before we got into real estate, we tried a few other businesses, and because we were like, hey, let's try this. Let's try Amazon. Let's try this. Let's try that. And sure, you know, all of those things could work, but real estate has proven for the last hundreds of years that it works.
Yeah.
It's you buy an asset, you hold on to it for a long period of time. Like it's very forgiving as a strategy, even if you make
mistakes. If you can hold it. Yes.
Agreed.
100%.
Allows you to hold it. Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, you don't want to buy it that you can't hold it, because then you are playing with fire. Right? So let's jump on in the interest of time here. I love this conversation, Nithi, but I know our time is, we're time constrained today. So what is that, when you made that plunge, I know you're doing the Burr method, which is buy, rehab, rent, refi, all the good strategies. For those of you who have not heard of it, I will do a very quick one-on-one on that method. Tell us that method, and tell us kind of the asset classes you're delving in.
Yeah. So, you know, we first kind of started buying rent-ready rentals, right? So we buy a single-family home, we put 25% down, rent it out day one, and cash flow. And that was a good model, except that you need capital upfront to invest. Okay. So there was a capital constraint. So going back to, you know, we were putting on our strategy hat and thinking, how do we scale this? I don't want to buy one or two properties a year. I want to buy 10, 15 properties a year. And if I want to do that, what would I do differently?
Yeah.
So you want to solve for the capital constraint, which usually is the biggest constraint in real estate. So what the BRRRR strategy allows you to do is that because you're buying a property that's a little bit distressed that needs some work, you can buy it for cents on the dollar, right? So you can buy it for 40, 30 cents on the dollar as opposed to paying full price. And then you rehab it and you make it really nice. You put a new kitchen, new bath, and you force the appreciation in a short period of time. So instead of waiting 10, 15 years for the property to appreciate, you appreciate it in 3 to 6 months by rehabbing the property. And now what a flipper would do, they would sell the property. Instead, we hold on to it and then do a cash out refinance, pull the cash out. So instead of now putting in 25% in the deal or 30% in the deal, with BRRRR, we are left with maybe $5,000 in the deal or $10,000 in the deal. And that now allows us to do, you know, 5, 10, 15 times the amount of deals we would have been able to do otherwise. So that's the general concept. And you can apply that same concept to a single family home, to a duplex, triplex, quadplex, all the way up to 100, 200 unit apartment buildings, right? The concept stays the same. The execution varies depending on, you know, how you raise capital, how you do different things. But it's the same concept.
Love that. So where, how did you get into it? Because I can barely hold a hammer, let alone rehab the entire property. Right? I always tell my partners, like, if you want to rehab, I'm good at a lot of things. Don't show me a property and tell me how much it's going to take to fix it. I don't know. And I'll never know. So help me understand with your background, with not being in the construction background, not being in the rehab, maybe grew up in the real estate world, and maybe you didn't. How did you learn all these skills? Because as I look at it, is all these are limiting beliefs that I can't do it, right?
Yes.
Somebody else has. So that means all of us can do it. So what was your journey in?
So, you know, we had a couple of mentors that kind of showed us the ropes initially. I think when you're starting out, you want to not repeat the mistakes that other people have made, right? It's just the easiest thing to avoid is like, all right, what do I do right? What should I avoid? So having somebody to show you the ropes. And we did one rehab project, where we bought a single family home. So if you're looking to do your first project, do something that's small and simple, because it'll allow you to take smaller risks at a time. Right. So if you do a 10 unit building first up, you're going to make a lot of mistakes and that's too much risk. Yeah. Start with a small single family home. That's what we did. All it needed was a new kitchen and one bath. And we did that as a $45,000 rehab project. And that was, you know, we did that. And then that gave us a lot of confidence. So we did a few, 8 or 10 single family homes first. Mm-hmm. And then we're like, okay, now we can do a duplex or a triplex. And then we moved on to a 10-unit building, right? And then we're like, oh, now we can do a 15-unit. And so you can build on those learnings, but it's, you know, you don't, we were not, neither my wife nor I were experts, or I can, my wife will tell you, I can barely change a light bulb in the house. So I'm not hands-on. So the way I like to do it is hire the right people to do the job, make sure, you know, you have the right systems and processes in place, so that you get the rehab done on time and under budget.
Which is, again, I think the Dan Sullivan's concept, right? Who not how? Is that who do I...
Don't
worry about how would I do it. Rather, who do I need to bring in the team so that we can do it? So it's really who not how. Like anything in life, unfortunately, who not how doesn't work when you're an employee, because you are the who. and you are the how.
Yeah.
Everything just stops at you. But fortunately, in business, it's the more leverage you're able to create, the more growth you see. Because one individual cannot learn every skill. It's impossible. So I love that. So Niti, what is the business model right now? Are you still sticking to the BRRRR model? Because one of the components in there, which I'm sure a lot of people are asking questions, is, well, that model worked great when the interest rates were 2%, 3%. It was amazing. It's not going to work in 8%. It's not going to work in
8%. And that's... Great question. And, you know, it still very much works. And the reason is that when you do your numbers, you're kind of factoring in the higher interest rate, right?
Yeah.
So, and the kind of properties that we buy, it cash flows from day one after you rent it out. So because of the higher interest rate, maybe the cash flow, the initial cash flow is a little bit lower, right? So maybe the initial cash flow is a little bit lower, but in single family homes and in BRRRR deals, a lot of money that you make is through long-term appreciation, long-term rent growth, long-term debt pay down, right? And so in year one, if you're cash flowing instead of $200 a month per property, you're cash flowing $100 a month per property, it's not going to make a significant difference because in year two, your rent is going to go up and your mortgage is going to stay the same. Same thing in year three, year four, year five.
Right. It's a long-term game, right?
Exactly. And, you know, and if you think of the last market cycle, last few years, I think it was a lot harder to invest like two, three years back when it was COVID because everything was overpriced and there's five offers on every property. Right. I think it's a little bit easier now to invest than it was back then.
Love it. So you're saying, Niti, that doesn't matter. I think what you're, I'm going to put a different spin to that. Everything works in every market.
Absolutely.
It's just that the numbers look different. Doesn't mean it doesn't work, right? If you made 100%. If you made 17% profit, maybe now you make 12% profit. But that doesn't mean it doesn't work. You just have to adjust to what the market realities are. If you're still in this market, if you're still looking for a $200 cash flow, and I'm making that as an example,
right?
You may not be able to find anything.
Right.
That doesn't mean it doesn't work. That means that you have to adjust according to what's happening in the market. It still works. Long term, it'll still work. Because that $100, $200 difference in the long term is not going to mean anything.
That's right.
So love that. Love that, Niti. Now, Niti, are you doing this by yourself? Do you have partners? How does that work for if somebody wants to work with you?
So we do all these deals by ourselves in Philly, but we do syndication deals all over the U.S. So that's where people can partner with us. But yeah, we do larger syndication deals, 100, 200 unit apartment buildings where it's easier to find and structure partnerships. But we have our own portfolio that we keep growing on the side, right? We're like, we have done this. It's an autopilot. Every year we buy
as well.
A few properties and keep scaling.
Yeah. Love that. And Niti, how are these properties run down properties, Niti? That you're buying?
Say that again.
Are these properties run down properties in war zones? Or are we talking about
you know what?
Great neighborhoods?
Yeah, so these are in up-and-coming neighborhoods, but not in D neighborhoods. So if you think of the spectrum of A, B, C, and D neighborhoods, right, where A being the most expensive and then D being sort of the war zones, we do more like B minus C neighborhoods where there is still room for growth, but it's still not like war zones and you still find good tenants.
Perfect. Hey, this is great, man. Thank you again for coming on the show. We're coming towards the end of our show here, and I know it took us a while to get started to technical issues, but unfortunately we had time constraint. So let me ask this question in a way that makes sense to you, or may make sense to you, is you got two kids, right? How are you raising them in terms of what values you're instilling now? That, of course, going back in time, you can't change your path. And I'm sure you never want to change your past because you are who you are because of your past. But if you were to instill some values for your kids, how are you raising them differently than how you got raised?
That's such a great question because we talk about this all the time. You know, what we should be doing to, you know, raise our kids in a way that some of the things that worked well for us when we were growing up and some of things that didn't. And, you know, we had to overcome a lot of generational barriers of mindset issues. Like we were like, when we were growing up, it was money doesn't buy you happiness and, you know, don't spend too much or, you know, only spread your feet, you know, as much as you can.
Never take debt,
right? Always buy. And so all these limiting beliefs, you know, I shouldn't say limiting beliefs, a lot of these money beliefs, negative money beliefs that we had to work very hard to overcome ourselves. And we're making that a lot easier for our kids. And, you know, we're involving them. I think the biggest satisfaction that I think, you know, even if everything that we have, all the assets that we acquired suddenly go away, it doesn't matter because what we are giving to our kids is, you know, a way of thinking of and we involve them in everything that we do from a business standpoint, even though they're small, not in a big way, but we just kind of expose them, right? Like kids learn through osmosis, and definitely. And that's kind of just what we want to have them, you know, grow up in, and not have all these limiting beliefs and beliefs in around money that can hold them back.
Yeah, love it, Nithi. So Nithi, what's one thing that you believe humanity as a whole is lacking right now?
That's such a great question. You know, I think we were born, I mean, you know, when we were kind of brought up in India, it was all about people coming together, right? It was all about everybody's one, there's no differences, everyone gets along. And I think in general with what you're seeing around the world everywhere, right, with like wars and, you know, all that stuff, it's, and everyone's becoming more and more just self-focused, if that's a word. And, you know, I wish we can all sort of come together and through, especially that, if there's one thing that I could change, if I had a magic wand, I would want all the good guys in the world and the good women in the world to have all the wealth. Mm. And I just think we need more good players in the world in powerful positions, and, you know, people who have wealth and people who have power. And so if you're a good guy or a good woman listening to this, which I'm sure all of you are, right? It's up to us. Like, you know, if we don't change the world, who will? So I think that's, if that's one thing I could change, is I would want more good people to have power and money.
Love that. On that high note, Nithi, thanks again for being in the show. Where can people find you, man?
So you can follow us on Instagram. It's, my wife started this Instagram page called Open Spaces Women. You can follow us there. We share lots of real estate tips. We also wrote a book called Accelerate Your Real Estate. So you can find that on Amazon.
Awesome. Well, Nithi, thank you again for taking the time. And for the listeners, hopefully this inspired you, because the journey that Nithi had, journey that I had, journey a lot of our guests have, it's, we're not here to pat our backs. It's really to share these, to, the purpose of sharing these stories are to make sure that you can get inspiration from that, right? And if you need further inspiration, keep tuning in, because there's going to be more of Nithi's coming on the show. Fortunately, there's not one of Saket or one of Nithi. There's plenty of us around. And there's plenty of us who have gone through that same journey as you have, same insecurities, same limiting beliefs, but no special. I don't think I am special. I know, Nithi, you don't think you're special. We're cut from the same cloth. We all have same journeys, and somehow we're gaining inspiration from it, right? So thank you again for tuning in. Without you, the show will not be possible. Let us know how the show affected you, impacted you in a positive way or negative way. Hopefully, I only hear the positive ones. But if you have negative inspiration, let us know that too, because we'd love to hear from you. Thank you again. Nithi, thank you, buddy.
Thank you so much.
If you got value from this episode, you might consider sharing this content with a friend. But most importantly, be sure to take action on what you've learned. One way you can take the next step is to connect directly with Saket on an investor call. That link is waiting for you in the show notes below.